Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And yes, you recognize him, Dr. Travis Yates, retired police major from the Tulsa Police Department. So thanks for being on the show, Dr. Travis. Also, a shout out to our sponsors. You know, we have Gauls at Gauls.com. They are our title sponsor. We also have ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor, getting us on satellite radio right now. Also, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to Safeguard, we're streaming over a million followers right now on social media during the live show. And if you have an agency and you're having trouble getting people, or you just want to get people the right way so that you can retain them or they're not going to leave, hey, StreamYard, SafeguardRecruiting.com, they're the guys to go to that'll get it done, and they'll do it right the first time. And that way, you're not going to be bribing people to come to your agency and promise them things you can't deliver on and then worry about them going to a different agency later on. Safeguard Recruiting gets it done. Also, TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. If you want cool shirts like the one I'm wearing or the coffee mug behind me, we've got shirts, hats, pants. We've got just about everything on there. So check that out. LeoRoundtable.com, upper right-hand corner. We've got our online store. And also, a shout-out to our very own Travis Yates. Thanks for our presence on LawOfficer.com. We also have Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com and Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press at TampaEPI.com. Thanks for all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are Travis and I going to be talking about today? Let me just whet the appetite on what some of the stories are. We've got a main story: Trump signals deployment of ICE to airports amid DHS shutdown. No more games. And then Elon is weighing in on this too. Then we got Boston police officer facing a manslaughter charge when he shoots a carjacking suspect. Are you kidding me? And then we got two dead after three family members end up being stabbed and the suspect is shot by the Fairfax police officers. We've got a naked dude. he shot when he attacks people, tries to hit the officers with a shovel. There are some problems with this. We will discuss that. Colorado lawmakers reject a bill that would have required officers to intervene, basically go up against ICE agents if they are using excessive force. So maybe there is hope for Colorado after all. We've got a canine, Mako. He finds a suspect pretending to be a trash bag, if you can believe that. Yeah, there's video. And then we got feds moving to dismiss charges against the officers accused of falsifying the warrant in the Breonna Taylor raid. We've also got a vehicle theft suspect taken down and bitten by another canine in Portage County. And then finally, Governor Ron DeSantis here in Florida, he's being pitted up against some sheriffs. We got some sheriffs, including Grady Judd, that are going up against him in a different philosophy on how they deal with the illegal immigrants. And it's kind of a situation that's kind of unique to Florida. We'll discuss that as well if time permits. So if you're ready, Dr. Travis, we'll go and get started on the first story. Tampa Free Press at TampaEPI.com. Trump signals deployment of ICE to airports amid DHS shutdown. No more games. Now, I'm just going to kind of condense this instead of just having to read this and put it in my own words. You'd have to have been living under a rock to not be aware of what's going on with the funding for the Department of Homeland Security and how Dems are saying, hey, look, you know, we're not going to give you the funding, any future funding for ICE, even though ICE is funded through 2029, we're not going to give you any more funding in that, you know, if we, you know, we're going to shut down the government, basically, instead of giving any more funding to ICE. And they're holding hostage agencies like, we've got the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, and that's why security at the airports is under, so much strain right now. And they're holding it hostage because they want the ICE agents to wear masks. They say that they're doing this because they're killing people. And, of course, you know, the two people they killed, I have yet to see anything proving that those were not justified shoots. We know the good one where we got clear video of her, you know, hitting the ICE agent with the car. That was a bona fide good shoot. That chick's dead because of what she did. And then we have Elon Musk coming in saying that, hey, I'll cover the salaries of these people, of the TSA people, until, you know, we get the government back open. But Trump is not wanting to wait. He wants to move the ICE guys in. He's saying, hey, look, while we're there, we're going to be grabbing the illegals while we're there, too. So thanks for the opportunity. He's going to make it work that way. Dr. Travis Yates, your take on this.
When are Democrats going to learn? They're not playing with a typical politician here. What a four level chess move by the president, right? I mean, and you know, I don't know who's advising these politicians, but I mean, they had a little momentum behind them after Minneapolis because it was just a disaster and the media just was a disaster. And I mean, I think normal people see that for what it is, but I, you know, there was a little, Republicans took a little bit of hit there because that's exactly what Democrats wanted. They wanted some, they wanted chaos to reign. And then they go and they totally screw up the travel of regular day Americans because of it. And I think that probably that's even shipped him back. And so my anticipation is Trump is saying this because you got to remember how Trump operates. And they still don't understand it. He always comes out with this, I'm going to do this. And it always isn't what he's going to do, but it almost scares the opposition into giving in, right? And so my guess is he's never going to have to put ICE inside airports because the Democrats are going to all of a sudden go, okay. We'll start today.
Yeah, it's supposed to start today. But
I'm telling you, man, the minute he says the word ICE, because listen, everyone that's traveled to an airport knows that ICE is going to be busy at an airport with illegal immigration. Everybody that works there, everybody that goes to the airport knows when you look around, you go, well, ICE is going to have a field day here. Now, here's what you have to look for, because you're not dealing with sane people here oftentimes. What the Democrats are going to want is they're going to want chaos in the airports. They're going to want to create a Minneapolis inside airports. So it would not shock me that they don't send in protesters inside airports.
Interesting.
Even buying them a plane ticket and get them into security and then have them act crazy in front of an ICE agent. That's not going to surprise me. And I have a feeling that the Trump administration is aware of that and they'll know that. And by the way, if you commit crimes in an airport, it's different in the streets of Minneapolis.
That's right.
So that would be what my reaction would be. So this four-level chess the President Trump plays, I have a feeling he's already ahead of that. And there'll be people that think they're getting their $500 a day and a plane ticket to go in there and make a viral scene at an airport. And they'll go to federal prison for 10 years. I'm telling you, the airports don't play. And so that's going to be very interesting to see play out. And I think it's just comedy. I think it's great. Of course, put federal agents in airport. They try to separate ICE away from federal law enforcement, Chip. No, they are federal law enforcement. ICE and ATF and they all have the same federal jurisdiction. They may specialize in a certain thing, but they all have the same federal jurisdiction, and airports are federal jurisdiction. So it's very appropriate. It's very funny, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the reaction is to this.
Yeah, you know, the last statement I saw from President Trump was that it's likely that a lot of these ICE guys might be doing more traffic control and other things like that and freeing up the TSA guys to be, you know, actually hands-on in the airport and stuff. But however they work it, you know that he saw this coming a mile away. And and he's going to use this to his advantage.
And the other thing interesting, Chip, is not every airport is chaotic with the long lines. That's weird to me. Like, you'll see these... Look how long the line is at Detroit or LaGuardia or whatever. But then at other airports, you get through in just a few minutes. So I don't know what's going on there. I don't know whether there's actual policies in certain cities that are causing this, but or is it even true, right? I mean, who knows with the media? They love to post all these long lines, but I hang out with a bunch of people that travel all the time, and no one's complained about it yet. Like, like in real world, I've not seen it. People I hang out with haven't seen it, so... Who knows?
Yeah. So the people that are listed the other side, look, there's a lot of people that watch the show and you guys are rubbing elbows with people that are on the other side of this equation, right? They think that, man, what are the, you know, because the Dems are saying the same thing about us. We're saying, hey, you know, they're holding this thing hostage, you know, unless we give in to the, you know, to the demands they're making for ICE. They want to have more restrictions on ICE officers, but it bothers me. I was watching a debate on Fox yesterday, and the female on Fox never really called the Democrat congressman on what he was saying. He's talking about how ICE is killing people, and he named, Good, but she never called him on that. And she said, what was improper about the killing? Yeah, would you rather the ICE agent, you know, be dead? The examples they're using, and then, of course, they want them to not be able to wear masks, knowing full well that they're doxing agents, they're giving away their, you know, their address information, their families are in danger and stuff. Just some ludicrous demands that they're making. And so that's on our side, but that's the side of both arguments. So,
well, I wish somebody would ask them, what what standards do you want ICE to operate under? ICE has to operate under the same standards that all federal law enforcement has to operate under. Case law, policies, procedures. I mean, they're upset about the mask thing, but hey, quit doxing them. Pass a federal law that make doxing a federal crime, and I bet they will take their mask off and then arrest everybody that doxed them, but they won't do that. So
yeah.
This is set. Listen, this is a repeat of 2020. You know, they took a few isolated incidents and they blanketed the entire profession. And regardless of that use of force was improper or proper, we don't know that today. Regardless, you don't blanket an entire profession based on two actions, because they have deported thousands and they've made thousands and thousands of contacts, hundreds of thousands of contacts, yeah. Right? And so, but that's what the politicians do. That's what the media does. And hopefully people see through that, because I think most people just want to be safe. They want ICE to be like a referee. They're there, but I don't even know they're there. And by the way, if you're a citizen in America and you're not out there acting a fool of yourself, you're never going to know they are there.
You know, the Renee Good shooting, anybody worth their soul, I haven't met anybody that can say that they're any way, shape, or form, that's not a legit shoot, because we actually got video of the car hitting him. Now, the one with Alex Pretty, you know, there's really not a lot of video on that to show one way or the other. I still believe it's a justified shoot, but Chip,
we watch a video that looks like Renee Good every week on this show. We watch that play out every week. And after break, I'll tell you about the Alex Pretty shooting if you want to keep going.
Okay. All right. I want to hear it. 10 seconds out, guys. Our first commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Yates, retired police major from the Tulsa Police Department. We've been talking about the Dems and the Republicans going at it. The Dems don't want to fund the government, so we have a partial shutdown we're still dealing with. Meanwhile, the Republicans are not letting the Dems, you know, force them to basically defund ICE. And open up TSA and all that other stuff. And when we went to commercial break, we just talked about the Renee Good and Alex Pretty shooting. And Travis Yates, you know, I was saying that clear video, it didn't come out timely enough. I wish it would have come in early involving Renee Good, but not every police, in my opinion, not every police shooting. You don't need guys like Jamie Borden or Vaughn Kleem for most shootings to know whether they're legit. I just don't believe that you do. It's nice to have that, but I haven't seen a lot of stuff involving the Alex Pretty. Renee Good, I think it's a good shoot, no matter which way you look at it. But I haven't seen a lot on that. But Travis was getting ready to clue us in on some information he's available about that. He has about that shooting. So, Dr. Travis, the floor is yours.
Yeah, first off, Alan, I just saw your comment. No, nothing against what you said. What you said was accurate. I was just sort of diving a little bit deep down that rabbit hole, whether Dems hate law enforcement or not. And as people that weren't here on the break, we just described how it's not that they hate law enforcement, they just use them politically. But the Alex Pretty shooting, now I haven't seen the final investigation. It's not out yet, but I do a lot of expert witness work around use of force. And I think I'm going to make some assumptions here. So this is not facts that I'm stating, but I think one of two things occurred here. First off, the SIG P320 was what he was carrying. And that gun has had multiple lawsuits because the gun just goes off. Like literally, there's videos right now on YouTube of literally the gun just going off without a finger on a trigger. So there's been lots of issues with that. Most a lot of law enforcement agencies have gotten away from that. So one or two things happened. Pretty was wearing a gun. He starts fighting cops. That's really where this whole thing started. Nobody wants to talk about that. He starts fighting cops. And they start struggling with him to get him in custody. Okay. the officers, you got to think of the chaotic scene here and the unknown factor. Everybody wants to, after the fact, go, oh, yeah, this happened. No, the officers at the scene have no idea. They have no idea that he, you know, they just know that he's fighting him and he's got a gun on his hip. At some point, somebody took the gun away from him in the crowd, an ICE agent. But the other ICE agents that are fighting with him are fighting with him. And at one point, they look down and they see a gun. At another point, they look down and they don't see the gun. So what is your assumption if you're fighting a guy with a gun on his hip? Your assumption is the guy's got a hold of his gun.
That guy's right? Got it, yeah.
That's scenario one. The other scenario, I think what could have happened was is when they did take the gun from him, the gun just went off, as we've seen with the P320. I'm not saying as a fact that happened. That's just a theory that I have. So, but the one that's really hard to believe is we just murdered Alex Pretty. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever because a lot was going on that created that. Is it tragic? Of course it is. But this is how tragedies occur when people act completely insane with weapons and it's an unknown situation for law enforcement, you know, and you know, if you're in a fight with a guy with a gun and you all of a sudden the gun is not on the guy's hip anymore and you don't know for a fact that it's the ICE agents that have taken the gun, your assumption is that he has reached for the gun and obtained the gun. And I bet when they do interviews with those agents, I bet there's a handful of them that had that exact perception. And that's how use of force is judged by the courts, is your perception at the time, not after the fact.
All right, that's an excellent point. In theory, I can't wait to see what comes out of the investigation, see how spot on you are. You probably nailed it one way or the other. So
we'll see.
All right. Guys, moving along here, we got our next one here. And let's see, we've got a, well, you know, I tell you what, let's go to Boston real quick. Lawofficer.com. So this is from Travis's own site. We have Boston police officer faces manslaughter charge after shooting a carjacking suspect. Listen to this, guys. And I don't know, and Travis, I don't know if you've seen the video, and I was reading this and I didn't have time to try to find the video. So I'm not even sure there's a video out there on this, but we have a Boston police officer, Nicholas O'Malley. He's only 33 years old, arraigned on Thursday in Roxbury Municipal Court. The charge is a voluntary manslaughter. And there was a March 11th fatal shooting of a guy named Stevenson King, who's 39 years old, so 6 years older than the cop. And on March 11th, Boston police responded to a carjacking. They got information from a female victim. She's in the passenger seat of her car. It's running, and she was allegedly assaulted and ordered out of her car by this unknown guy. The officers locate the suspect vehicle shortly afterwards. It's in front of the Linwood Square and an address over there. Officer O'Malley and Officer Todd Ho, they spot our bad guy King. He's sitting in the reclined driver's seat of the vehicle that's running. And both officers draw their firearms. They shout commands to our bad guy to show his hands. And he showed his hand at times and then partially opened the driver's window, but he did not shut the car off and he did not unlock the door. So Officer O'Malley draws his taser, shouts at King, the bad guy, again, saying, "Hey, bro, I'm going to effing shoot you." And at that moment, bad guy puts the car in the gear, puts it in reverse first, backs towards an officer that's behind the vehicle, hits the cruiser, and then he starts going forwards and backwards trying to escape. And then during the final forward movement, Officer O'Malley fires his gun at least three times. He actually hits the bad guy. King's vehicle accelerates. It crashes into a stone wall, comes to a stop, and he's pronounced dead. An autopsy found that he had been struck three times with two bullets recovered from his torso. There was a third projectile on the passenger side of the seat. And then we've got our Boston Patrolmen's Association. So we got the union president, Larry Calderon. He says that, he's flanked by 60 officers that are in support of this officer that's doing the trial thing, saying no officer ever wants to take a life. They don't want to discharge the firearm. And we carry that piece of equipment to keep you and your family safe. And we do a very good damn job at it. I love the quote that he made. And then we have the defense attorney on the same side, Kenneth Anderson. He pushes back sharply against the prosecution, saying that, you know, the camera doesn't tell everything. It doesn't show adrenaline, doesn't, you know, it's not worried about people's hands or going home at the end of the day and stuff. So Officer O'Malley pled not guilty. He was released on his own recognizance. However, he had to surrender any firearms in his possession because he has already been suspended by the Peace Officer Standards and Training Commission after he was charged. Travis Yates. Yeah, well, we got about 15 seconds. Yeah,
we're seeing this across the country, these types of prosecutions, and you talk about a chill effect for officers and officer safety and officers hesitating. We'll get to the video later where that have happened. But we come back from break, I'll break this video down based on not what the prosecutor said, but based on what the courts have said in the past.
All right, thanks. Commercial break. Here we go. All right, guys, introducing Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but now they've had over 250,000 deployments with no injuries, no deaths. It's achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove of ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip and Travis sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Watch the cool videos as well. You'll be glad that you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Yates, retired police major from Tulsa. And we've been talking about Boston police officer facing a manslaughter charge after shooting a carjacking suspect. And that's at lawofficer.com. Travis Yates.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about this case the way the prosecutor did not talk about this case, which is the way you should talk about it, which is based on what actual case law says. And if anybody's interested, you can look it up later. But the use of force case law is called Graham v. Connor. It was passed in 1989, and it's not going anywhere. It's been challenged year after year, and it's going to be here for the next generation or two. And what Graham v. Connor says is you have to judge an officer's use of force based on what they call totality of circumstances. That means all of the information that you know at the time you made the decision, not after the fact. So you notice the words from these prosecutors. They said things like, he didn't have a gun, and the officer didn't get hit by the car, and the officer wasn't even behind the car. Well, that's all information that we know after the fact. And Graham v. Connor specifically says you cannot judge actions like that, because they said, listen, we grant officers this authority to use of force, even deadly force, but they have to do it with a split second decision. So we can't judge them after the fact. It actually is called hindsight bias, by looking at it after the fact. Well, everybody wants to do that. So look at this case from that standpoint, Chip. Totality of circumstances. He carjacked a woman. They knew that information. They find him. They go up to him. He starts non-complying. He starts hiding his hands. He starts backing the car up. He strikes the police car. And the officer perceived that there was an officer in the car's path as it's backing up, and he uses deadly force. And what they used to charge him with was, well, the guy wasn't actually in the car path. He was just to the side. Well, imagine yourself in that situation as you're focused in on the suspect driving your car and hitting cars and driving, you know, and just did a carjacking. You think maybe he's got a gun because he's hiding his hands. Because here's a tip. Most people that carjack vehicles do have guns. Everybody with the brain knows that. So he's using peripheral vision, and you have very limited peripheral vision in a high stress situation. That's not me. That's what science says. Everybody wants to believe the science these days. And so, yeah, completely appropriate. His perception was that officer's life was in danger. But even if you take that away, Chip, people don't know this. We can shoot fleeing felons that are extreme risk to the public if they get away. And so even if you throw that first part out, that argument that That's I right. made, we can, the case law also says that if someone is committed a felony and fleeing, and they are a risk to the public if not captured, you can use deadly force. You can shoot them in the back. You can shoot them from the back of the car. You can shoot them as they're fleeing away. It's why it's called fleeing felons. Okay. And so there's two arguments here that I'm sure can easily be made by an expert on this case that will be made, but they're going to play games, because I've seen this. They're going to say, oh, we don't want those experts' opinions, and we don't want them to talk about policy and training, and we just want to judge this. I mean, so they're going to have to play all these games, but we got to pray that the jury will get to hear what I just said and make the appropriate decision, because it's extremely unfair. And that's why these officers in Boston are up in arms, because they know, just like we know, this has happened across the country every single day. We watch videos like this every week on this show, and there's many more out there. So am I happy that people have to lose their lives? No. But that was caused by the actions of the suspect. And Chip, this is why I launched this course called Focus, Field Observable Cues for Unknown Situations. It takes totality of circumstances and gives it to officers in a documented way to be able to document that. And it's the first safety system for law enforcement on pre-attack indicators based in peer-reviewed research. If anybody's interested in that, and I did this. One reason I did this is because I kept seeing officers being prosecuted for legal justified shootings. And this is going to give them some power and control and educate these politicians before it comes to that. If anyone's interested, you can go to focuscertified.com. It tells you all about that program. We're doing those live around the country right now. Focuscertified.com.
I love it. I love it. Guys, remember that. Focuscertified.com and check that out. All right. I love it. Love it. Anything else? Are you ready to roll into the next one, Travis Yates?
Oh, I think I spoke enough on that one. Let's roll.
Okay. Well, we got some videos here. Look, I'll take these in order. There are a couple of canine videos as well, but I'll take these in order unless you want to take one out of order. You know, the first one, this Fairfax one, it's just utterly chaotic. I mean, it just so many flashbacks of so many scenes. It's so typical, right? Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, a perfect example on just total chaos and you never know what you're going to find. So we have two dead after three family members, three end up being stabbed. The suspect ends up being fatally shot by Fairfax police officers.
Fairfax County Police! Hello, are you okay? Come over here. Come here, Aki.
Come here, come up.
445 Alpha, we've got a female covered in blood here, screaming out the door. Ma'am, can you come up here?
Ma'am, are you able to come upstairs?
I'm not going to come up here!
I hear a kid screaming inside.
All right, ma'am, can you... Fairfax County Police, open the door! Hey, put the knife down! Drop the knife! Do it now! Drop the knife!
Oh, the drone Bravo shots fired. I need to get him. I gotta get her help.
We have two females that end up dying. The male suspect or a male victim lives, but we have two females. I think a mother and a daughter end up dying. So we're in Fairfax, Virginia. This man fatally stabs his daughter and his wife. Then he attacks his son-in-law before the officers arrive, and they shoot him inside a Mantua apartment. Now, you know, can you imagine the son-in-law? I'm assuming it was his wife that ended up, you know, being stabbed and killed, you know, by his father, or by her father. But officers ended up getting a call on February 23rd. It's a DV call, domestic violence call. And they say that they found a woman with stab wounds outside the residence. And, you know, if you watch the video, the beginning of the video, there's a 911 call. And if you listen to it, there's a female neighbor telling the 911 dispatcher that, you know, my husband won't let me open the door and let the female who's bleeding outside and screaming for help. I can't let her in, but I want to call and let you guys know. You know, she's calling the police, but, you know, her husband was scared and didn't want to let in the female victim that ended up dying. So the cops get there. It sounded like they got there right away. You can hear the woman screaming. They're in a stairwell. It's an apartment complex. And so they're trying to, the officer initially was trying to get the female who stabbed and bleeding, you know, out, trying to get her to come up the stairs to him. And she's, you know, she's not, you know, complying. I don't blame her. So he ends up going down. And so now we have two male officers and they're outside this apartment door. And they finally, it ends up being unlocked. They open up the door. And when they open it up, they encounter the bad guy, Chatra Thapa, and he's armed with a knife and he's kneeling over a male victim. Presumably it already stabbed him. And there's a second woman that we really unaware of that's been stabbed too in that apartment, and she ends up dying too. So it was either the the wife or the daughter was outside the apartment and the other one was on the inside, and they both ended up dying. But when the cops opened the door, the guy's got a knife. He's it looks like he's on his knees with the male victim in front of him, laying on the ground, and he's got the knife in his hand. And when they tell him to drop the knife, he raises the knife up and he goes into stabbing motion when they light him up. And our bad guy died at the scene. The victims identified as 33-year-old Mantha Thapa and 52-year-old Binda Thapa. They're taken to the hospital, pronounced dead. Male victim hospitalized with life-threatening conditions. And then there's a one-year-old baby you can hear crying at the end that was unharmed in the apartment and has since been placed with family. Travis, what a chaotic scene. And I mean, at least we have, you know, the baby survived and the male did, but crap.
Yeah, I think anyone that's done this job sees that video, and we all have examples, maybe not just like that, of where we've gotten onto a scene and seen things like this. But yeah, when they show up in that room and he's sitting there with the knife and he's got blood all over him, it's just brutal, right? Just brutal. You know, not much to say about it other than, you know, compound what you saw in that video times a thousand, and that's the career of a law enforcement officer, and they have to live with that and sleep with that. And yeah, it is what it is. They don't really tell you that stuff in the academy. Okay, this is the type of scenes you're going to see. Right? This is not a movie. It's not a television show. This is real life.
I totally agree. And I just saw the message you sent me too. Yeah, by all means. Yeah, but you know, the trail. I mean, when they opened up the door, just the blood from the doorway all the way leading into the apartment, you knew nothing good. There was going to be nothing good to come out of that. You know, I mean, other than the survival of the two people, but oh my gosh, that was just a, that was brutal. I yeah. just wish we had more people that weren't too scared to open up the doors and to help save victims. You know, what kind of a world are we in where we're just too, you know, you got a female pleading for her life. And I mean, the only thing that would have made it worse is the guys outside that door stabbing her to death, and she just she dies like that, you know. But I'm assuming that she ended up bleeding out and didn't get the help that she needed. You know, if the neighbors would have at least opened the door and maybe, you know, done some kind of compresses on the wound or something to minimize the bleeding, maybe she would have survived, you know. But it's just just sad.
Well, I would say it's a sign of the times, but we have that case out of New York City from 40-50 years ago where I forget the name of it, where a woman was pleading for help and the entire neighborhood ignored her, right? And she was ended up being brutally murdered. So they've done a lot of research and case studies on that and the philosophy behind that. But yeah, unfortunately, that's just unfortunately people. It goes back to that cowardice versus courage, right? Most people, their default is I'm not getting involved. I'm not saying anything. I don't want to. That's just most people's default. It's when people can walk right into a store right now and just fill their shopping bags full of stuff and walk right out, and nobody says a word to them, right? That's just unfortunately the world we live in.
Yeah, too bad. Well, you ready to? Well, I can whet the appetite with the naked guy. If you can handle the naked guy story, I'll whet the appetite. We'll go to the commercial break and then we'll cover when we come back. Is that up? Can you handle that?
Yeah,
I know. Okay. This is at rumble.com. This is Butters the channel. Naked man shot when he attacks people and he tries to hit officers with a shovel.
One, what's your address to your emergency?
My neighbor just broke through the wall and punched his sister. I just saw her right now.
He just what?
He punched his sister and he broke through my front door.
How did he break through your front door?
He rammed it and hit his head through it.
Hey, what's up, Holmes?
Two Yuba City police officers were dispatched to the call. Upon arrival, the responding officers located the suspect and a short foot pursuit ensued. The suspect initially surrendered in the front yard of a nearby residence. Both officers approached the suspect to take the suspect into custody, at which point he became combative and a use of force occurred.
I believe in Jesus. I'm a believer.
Put your hands on your back.
Jesus Christ. Oh, thank you. I don't know now what this is.
Stop. No. No, stop.
Meditate.
Oh, fuck it. Put it off. Stop.
Get on the ground! Officers attempted to use less lethal options, including a taser and baton, to subdue the suspect and take him into custody, but both were ineffective.
Get on the ground!
Stop! You're on the ground! Stop resisting!
Roll over! Roll over!
Half split.
Roll over!
Don't let it split!
Roll over!
Roll over!
Roll over!
Roll over! Get on the ground!
Get on the ground!
No, no, no! Put it down! Put it down!
Once in the backyard, the suspect armed himself with a shovel and swung it at officers multiple times. As a result, an officer-involved shooting occurred.
You guys don't want to miss this story. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns and we deal with ammo every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us into trouble. And they've actually announced a new partnership with a smarter degree. And they actually allow certifications. This is GunLearn.com. You can get certified as a firearm specialist by GunLearn.com. And even over the last 5 years, if you got the certification, you can now rotate that in the college credits through Smarter Degrees University Partners. And whether you're pursuing a degree or you just want to maximize the value of your education, the partnership opens up a new pathway to academic recognition for your firearm training. GunLearn.com is the first and the only company that offers a step-by-step program to take you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. And that's the key. Become a certified firearm specialist and get credit for those college credits. This is one of the same now. Go to GunLearn.com to get more information, guys. GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Travis Shage, retired police major from Tulsa Police Department. And we left off getting ready to talk, do a story about a naked man being shot when he attacks people and he tries to hit officers with a shovel. And there's a lot to talk about here. And I don't mean that necessarily. I'm not talking about the naked guy. There's not a lot to talk about with that. There's probably not a lot to talk about with that, but I'm talking about the way it went down, Travis, just so I can clarify that. Yuba City, California. This is how they roll in California. Usually when I see naked guys, I think, okay, this is going to be another Florida story, making all the Florida guys look crazy, but we got some competition from California. So police in a place called Yuba, that is Y-U-B-A, never heard of it, Yuba City, and I'm assuming that I am pronouncing that correctly. They released video from an officer-involved shooting, and officers shoot this guy. They say he attacked people, and he tried to hit officers with a shovel. There are a lot of things done the wrong way on this. The shooting happened February 26, and about 9:15 in the morning, cops get a call to a nearby street for reports of a guy that's walking in a neighborhood naked. Now, the police department says they find this guy, Guillermo Figueroa. He's 31 years old, and yeah, he's naked, and he allegedly assaulted family members, and he tried to break into another home by ramming the front door. And if you don't believe that, there is a surveillance video of this guy running through someone's yard across the street. Travis, he jumps not over the hood of the trunk, but over the roof of the car, lands on the ground, and then he gets a running start. And now these people have like a doorbell cam. And you see this guy running up, and he just like, he's naked. He's just pounding to this glass door. He does that twice. The second time, he shatters glass, and he bounces off the door, and you know, there's somebody inside the house. You can hear them. And then he starts running back, and the cops get there pretty quick. And there's a foot pursuit, and he runs away. They chase him. Now it looks like he's given up. And so they try to take him into custody, but he resists. Well, they don't really say exactly how they do it. The guy follows commands. He gets in a prone position, face down on the ground, puts his hands behind his back, both hands. This is what he does. He gets lazy and he leans over, bends over, and he decides to put the cuffs on one at a time. He's supposed to get him in a 3-point pin. That way, if the guy breaks bad, he's got control of him. And of course, the worst thing, as Travis knows, is you had a bad guy that gets one handcuff on and he pulls away. Now he's got that weapon with that other cuff dangling. God forbid it opens up into like a hook and it's even worse. Well, that's exactly what happened. So they go to put him on. There's two cops there. No one's on him, controlling him, and he breaks bad. And so now they pull out the tasers and stuff, and they're going back and forth. He busts through a wooden fence, and they, you know, at that point, at some point, they transition from expandable metal batons to firearms, but he grabs a shovel and he takes what at least two swipes at the officer in close proximity before they light him up and they shoot him. I was kind of hoping they would have shot him sooner. He remains in critical but stable condition, if you can believe that. And a family member who was assaulted was treated for minor injuries and released. Dr. Travis Yates.
You know, this week, Major League Baseball is starting back. And there was a big deal many, many years ago about performance enhancement drugs, PEDs, and they started cracking down on that. Now, what they don't test for in Major League Baseball is they don't test for PCP. And I hope some of our baseball players haven't seen this video, because the athleticism of this gentleman was pretty incredible. I mean, he does a barrel roll over a car, lands right on his feet. His the power, just barrels through doors. Pretty impressive. But from that aside, I don't understand why we are continuing to see hesitation with law enforcement. You can't ask for anything more to know that we've got to get this guy under control. And so what we see is, obviously, you see a completely naked guy, and they know, every law enforcement officer knows on that call before they even get there, that this guy's either got PCP or some seriously laced fentanyl or marijuana that's caused this psychosis. But you're not going to reason with these individuals. I don't understand why we continue with the repeated commands and repeated commands. And surprisingly, he does comply initially. So if you got that compliance, you ought to be on top of him like nobody's business. And they just act like, just cuffing him up like a shoplifting suspect. And so it was clear and obvious this was going to go bad. And so, of course, they get one handcuff on him, and then he breaks free. And then they just start with the commands, and they start with the taser, and it just goes on and on and on until a guy with no weapon then gets a weapon, which is a shovel. And so at that point, they have to use deadly force. Now, Chip, I hate to keep repeating this because I'm not a sales guy, but this is watching these videos every week is one reason, as we've talked about, why I developed this training. Because this hesitation is actually creating more force. See, we all think de-escalation is we talk to them like Chick-fil-A and no force is used. Actually, it's the opposite. The longer they talk to this guy, the more likely they were going to have to use high levels of force. But if they would have been on him immediately and not surrendered and continued the lower level of force, which is handcuffing and strikings and tasers and things like that, then they would have never got to where they had to shoot him. Now, it's completely justified, but my point is we're training hesitation in so many officers, because we're so worried about everything, like what's going on in Boston. We're worried about YouTube. We're worried about politicians. We're worried about what the chief's going to say. And that training, that hesitation is why we're giving violent people time to then be violent. There has officially never been a violent person that was had violent intentions that you walked up to like Chick-fil-A and said, "Please, sir, do what I say." They all of a sudden went, "You know what? You're right." So that was never going to happen here, but we keep acting like it is. And so we have to stop hesitating. 10, 15 years ago, this shooting never happened. Chip, you and I both know that. Because you rode up on a call like that, you would take care of it immediately, because you knew if you didn't, it was going to go bad.
Yeah, no doubt. You got to call it like you see it. You know, this shooting would have been likely prevented. I don't know how strong the guy was. I don't know what he was jacked up on. But if they would have got him in a three-point pen and got hands on this guy when he was in a prone position, and, of course, they knew that he was not armed, right? I mean, the one advantage of dealing with someone that's completely naked is that you know that they don't have any hidden weapons.
As a heterosexual male, I think he was armed.
If I was
that close to him, I would think he was armed.
Oh. But just a missed opportunity. And of course, because of the way cops did, they would have got one handcuff on him and shot him because he had that weapon. You could argue that if they would have done proper handcuffing procedures, that it never would have escalated to the point of deadly force. And of course, he ended up getting hold of a shovel because, like, arguably because of the way they handled the arrest, you know, in a lazy way, you know, in the beginning, you know, which is weird.
Let me tell you what our research showed in this training, focuscertified.com. The officers that were shot or shot at waited till they saw over six pre-attack indicators, six. And that was through hesitation. We looked at 5 years of data nationwide. Officers that were shot or shot at saw pre-attack indicators 5.5 to 6 times. And they didn't do anything, and they were subsequently shot or shot at. the officers that showed up on a call and saw these same pre-attack indicators, which is predictions of violence, potential violence is going to occur, that were not shot, average 1.5. They saw an average of 1.5 indicators. What's the difference between those officers not getting shot and the officers that got shot or attacked? The officers took care of it once they saw the indicators. So the officers that didn't and hesitated and continued down this road of let's just give repeated commands, those officers are getting hurt. That's why since 2020, every year since Chip, the officer assault rate has increased to a record high in 2024. We're still waiting for last year's data. A record high. It's increased over 100% in the last 10 years. And no one's talking about this because we are training cops to get hurt by hesitating.
You know, let me throw this out there too. Travis, there is one device out there that's non-lethal that would have made a world of difference with this bad guy.
Yeah, the glove. I've already said it. It should be in the hands of every police officer. If you're a police leader and you care about your officer's safety, you have lost your mind if you're not providing them with a glove. You've got to go get that for your officers. This should be mandatory academy equipment.
Yeah, this would have been over, and it sobers people up. They've got people that are wigged out on all kinds of drugs and stuff, and it sobers them up immediately when they apply, which is the craziest thing. There's so many great things about the glove at ComplianTechnologies.com. Travis and I both had it applied when we were at SHOT Show together in January, and we have some healthy respect for the glove, believe me. So. Well, guys, and Dr. Travis, thanks for being on the show. Also, this focuscertified.com that you've got going on, very exciting stuff. I want to hear, you know, more about that, and I want to, you know, continue to help you push that out there. We got to get something on the new legal affairs about that, too, so guys can become aware of that on all the platforms. So, guys, check out focuscertified.com. I have it on the screen, but for all the Audible listeners, you know, that are radio and podcast, focuscertified.com. Check it out. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rainey Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. So please consider supporting that organization. They're doing some great stuff. Also, a shout out to our sponsors, Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeGuardRecruiting.com, and TwoBells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.